Welcome to SkyCast episode 13, a podcast dedicated to all things the 100. I'm Brittany Perlman.
And I'm Sarah McCabe.
And today we'll be discussing episode 413, Prime Faya.
Oh my god.
It's the last one.
We've made it the whole season.
We did it. So what did you think?
Oh my god. I loved this episode. This was a fantastic season finale. I was like on the edge of my seat the whole time. There were some great character moments. It was very stressful, but overall, really great. Very ending. The surprise ending was great. I mean, it wasn't really a surprise, but...
I think that this, you know, this is a bold statement, but I think this might be their best season finale yet.
Oh, I totally think this is their best season finale yet.
I mean, it's hard to judge because they do leave us on the edge of our seats every season. I will say they are very, very good at switching up and going in directions that I never could have predicted. But this one, as like a cohesive episode, just was a brilliant, brilliant piece of work.
I will say, I think that the season two finale was better. It was a better episode just because it was an amazing episode of television. But... when I ended that episode, I didn't feel like as obsessed with finding out what happens next as I do now.
Well, the end of season two, I think, ended on a very low note.
It wasn't really a cliffhanger, but it was like the Allie, like, rocket cliffhanger, or nuclear warhead or whatever it was.
And, like, Clark had gone off on her. Oh, it was very sad.
Well, that Allie Jaha cliffhanger was, like, so just out of the realm of what I had no idea where that was going. Yeah. So it was like... I was excited to find out, but also I didn't really get it.
No, I just feel really good. I feel really good.
I do too. I feel great.
Before we begin, I mean really begin, I just wanted to say one more time how appreciative we are of people who rate and review us on iTunes. So we would really love it if you could do the same thing. Just take a quick second and rate and review. It's really helpful for other fans of The 100 to find us. So please, please and thank you. Go do that. Also before we begin, I put this in myself, but I think I speak for both of us when I say that we need to put a disclaimer at the top of this episode that we are going to Bellark fangirl ship hard. If you are not about the Bellark, I am sorry, and maybe you should just skip this one.
Also, this might not have been the episode for you in general, because there was a ton of Bellark.
There's a lot of Bellark, and therefore, there's a lot of shipping happening here and squealing, so...
We do talk about other things, but
I just wanted to preface this episode by saying, like, I cannot contain myself, so I apologize in advance.
There is a lot of Bellark.
There's a lot of Bellark.
What can I say?
I mean, can't apologize. You can hear it in my voice. I'm very excited. So, yeah, let's get into it.
All right, let's start. Last one. So we open up and Bellamy is talking to Octavia on the radio. Octavia asks if they can survive those 5 years on the Ark. And when Bellamy assures her that Raven says that they can, Octavia says that she'll be waiting, the girl under the floor, once again. But Bellamy reminds her that she is not that little girl anymore. And I really love here how Octavia is ending in the same way that she started. You know, she's, again, the girl under the floor. But as Bellamy tells her, you know, she has come a long way since then, for better or for worse.
Oh, yeah, me too. And I really appreciated that Bellamy is the one to reassure her that she's not the same person she used to be. You know, she's grown up so much. It's like he's anticipating where this conversation is headed, and he tries to assuage her before she even can confess that she's got some self-doubts. Bellamy is always pretty astute when it comes to assessing everyone else's emotions, you know, but he's particularly good at analyzing Octavia, and he's also great at comforting her, you know, when she lets him.
Yeah. That's a big win. it's also interesting that Octavia really seems to need this reaffirmation from her brother. You know, like, logically, she knows that she's not that girl anymore, but in really the darkest parts of herself, I think she sometimes feels like she is. Like, she still feels like she's stuck in a life that she can't escape from. I mean, obviously, in a very different way than she was on the Ark, but that sense of being trapped is still there for her, and now more than ever that she's kind of stuck in the bunker.
Oh, agreed. And we can see that her usual swagger takes a back seat when she's facing something as huge and terrifying as leading this new nation of people. I think that the fact that she's looking for reaffirmation from Bellamy shows just how scared she really is.
Yeah, I mean, she should be scared because she's got a long road ahead of her. I don't envy her.
No, I don't either.
Bellamy can tell something's wrong, and Octavia says that everyone is looking at her like she knows what she's doing when all she did was win a fight. And he tells her that they're looking at her like that because she saved them, but that it won't last, that now she'll have to lead.
You know, if there was any question about the nature of their relationship being father-daughter, this should put it to rest. Like, this was the most fatherly advice moment I've ever seen from Bellamy. And I mean that as a huge compliment. He just reminded me so much of a concerned dad in this scene, and it was adorable.
I love how Bellamy's relationship with Octavia kind of defies labels. Like, he is her father and her brother and, you know, honestly, sometimes her mother, too. Which is why I think they have such a hard time getting along, because it's a lot of pressure when one person is your everything. And right now, he's, yes, totally in dad mode. Mm-hmm. So Octavia says she's not a leader, that it should be Bellamy or Clark in her place right now. But Bellamy says that neither of them could have done what she did. She gave people hope where there was none, like Prometheus stealing fire from the gods to give back to humans. It's like a nerd. Never mind the fact that Prometheus was chained to a rock and had his liver eaten, which Octavia interjects to ruin Bellamy's metaphor.
I love how nerdy they are, especially Bellamy, but Octavia too. This is one of those continuity things that the show does so well. This isn't the first time Bellamy has whipped out some, like, obscure Greek mythology reference, and nor will it be the last,
I hope.
I'm sure. It really helps round out Bellamy's personality, because you can see how these myths have informed his character. But it also shows that he's just a giant nerd, and I love that.
So true. It's like when your younger sister sometimes, or your younger sibling, either one, just kind of absorbs whatever the older sibling is interested in. And like my headcanon is that Bellamy would like come home and he'd tell Octavia all the stories that he learned in school or like the books that he was reading. And Octavia grew to love them just because Bellamy loved them so much. And so, you know, I love that they can kind of share something like that still after everything they've gone through.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also really, really glad that Bellamy had the chance to talk to Octavia a bit and, like, talk her down before he left for space, because I really think that she needed to hear from Bellamy more than anyone that, you know, he believes in her and that he knows that she can do this. She's needed his support, and now that she has it, I'm hoping that she'll take his words to heart and can be able to move forward with her new role as a leader.
Yeah, me too.
So Octavia says, "I love you, big brother. Guess it takes the end of the world for me to say it." But the radio goes silent right before Bellamy can tell her that he loves her too. And upon realizing their conversation is over, Octavia and Bellamy both say, "May we meet again."
This really felt like the final button on this very, very long sibling arc between the two of them. You know, finally, after all of this time, Octavia and Bellamy have reached a place where not only is she able to recognize how much she loves him and how important he is to her, but she's also able to say it and communicate that to him. This is so important because, again, Bellamy hasn't always been so sure about the way Octavia feels about him, given everything that's happened. I also think that having both of them say, "May we meet again," at the same time but separated, is a cool way to demonstrate that finally they're both on the same page and in the same place emotionally.
Yeah, this is definitely a long-awaited moment and very satisfying, particularly from, like, Bellamy's end. And like you mentioned, this is something that he's been really unsure about for quite a while, so it was really great to hear Octavia tell him this in the end. And she didn't even really need to hear it from him because she already knows how much he loves her. However, I still would have liked, at some point, for her to have apologized to him for the way she treated him in the past two seasons, as, like, most of it was highly unwarranted. But beggars can't be choosers, I guess, and I honestly don't know if Octavia is really the type. Like, she's kind of a wrap it up and move forward kind of person.
Yeah, that's very true. An apology would have been really nice. Possibly optimistic to the point of foolishness to expect one, but it still would have been nice.
I didn't expect it. I wanted it. But this is something that I know I have to let go, because she sure as hell isn't apologizing after 6 years, so.
I don't know. Maybe.
So, yeah. I'm gonna let it go.
Maybe she'll turn over a new leaf.
Yeah, she's gonna be doing like a 12-step program where she's like apologized to everyone she heard.
Like, imagine her as like a Buddhist.
Maybe. Who knows what that bunker is gonna turn
her
into?
I don't know. Jason has said that she's gonna be really, really different.
So. Maybe it's not gonna be the different that we expect.
Yeah, maybe she's gonna be like super zen.
So Clark comes in and asks Bellamy if they have her mom on the radio. Bellamy says that the radio is dead and he's sorry, but she won't get to say goodbye to her mom. As Clark starts to cry, Bellamy hugs her.
Most gratuitous camera work of all time. Tracking Clark's hands down Bellamy's back as she hugs him. Extra. So extra.
Oh my god, and his hand, like, gripping her hair, gripping her braid, like, it was all very unnecessary and also very pointedly done, might I add.
Like, did we possibly jump out of our seats and grab each other at this point?
No, that was actually the later scene, which is even better than this one, if I can, you know, say that, but you know, it's hard to tell because we Bellark fans were so well fed in this episode.
We definitely had some physical reaction to this. I was very overwhelmed. It's like hard to talk about this intelligently, as I warned.
I was physically reacting to this whole episode, and I mean, like, what can you say intelligently here about two people who, you know, just love to sit in epic embraces for hours at a time?
Nothing.
What can you say?
Nothing. There's nothing to talk
There's
about.
There's nothing to say. So moving on. So Indra tells Octavia that it's time. They have to focus on the Chosen now and that Octavia needs to lead them. That's what Bellamy said, says Octavia, but she doesn't feel like a commander. Indra says the time of the commanders and the flame is past. Now this is Octavia's time and Indra wants to help her. And with that, she gives her the commander's gear. Why? Why? Did the writers just forget the line they'd written 2 seconds ago? Like, I really thought in the middle of this speech that Indra was saying that they had to put their ground attritions behind them and start new ones. But for some reason, she tells her this, that, like, you know, the time of the commanders is over, and then she gives her the commander's gear to wear. Like, it's a very strange writing choice overall, and I definitely could have lived without it, to be honest.
Me too. I was very confused by this. It's like the writers just got amnesia, and I don't know. Like, talk about mixed messaging. I do think it's really interesting that Indra uses this very specific language to talk about the ground or religion in general. It was a pillar of their society, and it played a huge part in the commander's ascension. And when you consider that Indra used to be much more devout, you know, given what Gaia suggested in prior episodes, the speech takes on another meaning. You know, Indra has realized and is now suggesting that the time of Indra's childhood, you know, her own time, is ended. A new phase is beginning, and I think Indra recognizes that her place in this new world will not be the same as it was in the old one. And so the best she can do, like the only thing left for her to do, is to help Octavia thrive and in turn help their new people survive.
Yeah, I really like that interpretation. Although, I could still do without the commander gear, but whatever.
Let it go. Just let it go.
There's a lot of things I have to let go. Octavia comes out into the main room wearing her commander's symbol and tells everyone that this is it. They are all the remains of the human race. You know, give or take a few plucky delinquents, of course. Mm-hmm. She says that the next 5 years won't be easy, but if they stick together as one crew, then from the ashes they will rise. And with that, Prime Fire hits the bunker. So that's the end of the bunker storyline for this season. Up until now, Octavia has never really had a place to belong, and she's really still, I think, trying to find that for herself. So I don't know if the bunker will be that place, but I'm really hoping that she can, you know, find her people here in the next 6 years, and I just wanted to come out of this feeling like she's a stronger, wiser, happier person. But part of me knows that this show is not the happier, wiser, stronger person kind of show. Not all the time, at least. It's going to be a hard 6 years for Octavia, and she'll probably come out of this much harder because of it. So, don't know about the happier part, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it might be a combination of both. I think Octavia has enormous potential to absorb the teachings of those around her, from Indra to Kane, and yes, even Jaha. I don't think these next 6 years will be a picnic, but I think there's room for her to gain wisdom and self-assuredness alongside times of trial and hardship, too.
Especially with Nyla at her side.
Of course, how could I forget?
One thing that really stuck out to me about this scene was that Octavia says, "From the ashes we will rise," in Trigetta slang, which I love. Like, it gives me the impression that this will have, at some point, it will become a new slogan for One Crew when we see them next season. Like, you know, your fight is over, and I am so ready for it.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Did Gaia's look stick out to you? Why did she seem to be so upset by this?
That's a great question. And honestly, I don't know. I did notice that. I guess maybe because I get the impression that Gaia is really attached to the old traditions. And, you know, by Octavia saying this second dawn phrase in Trigetta slang, it's in some way making it clear that they're going to be moving forward, or, you know, at least moving in some direction that's not backward, instead of, like, clinging to the old ways. And I'm sure that scares her, you know, given that her entire life's purpose has revolved around the commanders and the flame, and now they're leaving that behind.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like, as you're saying this, it's just occurring to me that it also might be because she recognizes those words as Bill Cadigan's, someone who she sees as a corrupter of their faith. You know, when Jaha introduced Bill's teachings, it, like, its direct consequence was that it revealed that Becca's final resting place was actually, like, the secret bunker Bill had planned from the very beginning, you know, among other things. That's sort of, like, a perversion of what they've indoctrinated as their faith. And I'm not sure Gaia is happy about Octavia adopting this guy's slogan as their new philosophy.
Yeah, that's a good point. So back in Allie's lab, the delinquents are watching Polis destroyed by Prime Via from a camera on one of Allie's drones. Raven says if they're not off the ground 20 minutes before radiation hits, they're not going to make it. And then she, like, Raven-splains everything they have to accomplish in the next 90 minutes, which, honestly, all sounds pretty impossible. And now that they all know the ways they probably will die, Bellamy says it's time for Raven to tell them what they have to do to live.
Besides the sheer implausibility of what Raven is describing, I did really enjoy Murphy's sass in this scene, especially when he tells Raven, I thought you said this was going to be hard. And the look of done on Amori's face, she's just like, I love you, but shut up.
Yeah, like, there's not a lot to unpack in this scene other than the fact that there's no way they're going to survive, number one. And also, Murphy and Amori are hashtag goals.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, first things first, it's up to Monty and Murphy to get the oxygen generator from the lighthouse bunker. Monty is making it pretty clear that he doesn't like Murphy, and when Murphy asks what his problem is, Monty says, you know, beside trying to kill his best friend for keeping Murphy awake at night.
I mean, I get it, but, like, one, we don't have time for this. Two, that was a long time ago. Get over it. And three, we really don't have time for this right now.
In Monty's defense, he can definitely walk and be annoyed with Murphy at the same time. And although we've spent the last three seasons falling in deep, deep love with Murphy, Monty really hasn't interacted with him since the beginning of season two, I don't think, when Murphy was, you know, still at his worst. So I don't blame him for his attitude here. You know, he hasn't seen Murphy change like we've seen him.
That's fair. I still don't have time for this drama, though.
But then Murphy, in true season one fashion, jokes that Jasper was making a lot of noise that night. Monty is not amused, and Murphy recants, saying that it was a dick move, that Jasper was a lot stronger than he looked, and that it's a shame that he took the coward's way out, which Monty throws him up against a tree for.
Why, Murphy? Why? Like, check with me before you speak.
Yeah. This was a horrible thing to say to someone who just lost their best friend. You know, Murphy, he's come a long way, but he's still Murphy, and he always will be.
Yeah, he just can't help himself sometimes.
Yeah. So when Murphy reminds him that they don't have a lot of time, Monty lets him go, but he still can't believe that he has to be alone in space with Murphy for 5 years, and he tells Murphy that he should have drank the tea himself. So the most interesting thing about this scene to me was that, you know, the look on Murphy's face after Monty says this, he almost seemed genuinely hurt by this.
Yeah, I mean, I think Murphy has spent a lot of time around Amori at this point. You know, she's like the one person who would never think of him this way. And it's been a while since he's come face to face with the kind of loathing that Monty is feeling toward Murphy right now.
Maybe the last time was Raven earlier this season, but, you know, Raven and Murphy have definitely moved past that now. And I sometimes think Murphy is surprised when other people don't see how he's changed, because he sees how he's changed. But he did hurt a lot of people in season one, and he has to make that up to each of them in different ways. And he hasn't done that yet for Monty.
Not yet.
So they find the oxygen generator, but to pull it out, they have to unhook it. Monty can't do this with his gloves on, so he takes them off, and they pull.
So, ow.
Also, I found the bit of dialogue about Becca building much of the Ark's technology to be really interesting. I'm not sure it's probably only there because they wanted to explain away how they could use all of this tech on the Ark, I'm sure. But it does also open up some, like, Allie-related possibilities for season 5 that will probably never come to pass, but that I like to think about anyway.
Agreed, and I feel like we're not done with Allie. You know, I think she'll be back.
I mean, I hope that we're not, but I'm getting ahead of myself, so more on that at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So Echo is staring at the rocket, and Amori sees her and tells her to hurry up. On the balcony, Bellamy's watching Echo watch the rocket, and Clark notices him and comes over. Bellamy says that grounders in space is an oxymoron, but as Clark says, survival is a team sport, and they need her. So it's obvious at this point that Echo is not feeling confident about their trip to space.
No, and I don't have time for this. Like, Echo, get your act together and pull your own weight.
I mean, Echo has never seen this much tech in her life, and now she's about to go into freaking space. So, like, I feel that, girl. I'd be terrified, too. You know, besides, she doesn't know anything about any of this, so what is she supposed to help with? She's, like, kind of useless right now. Maybe she can, like, pick up some heavy boxes or something.
I'm not really blaming her. I just am not in the mood to defend her, even though I 100% understand where she's coming from.
I get that. You have a lot of,
feelings.
Yeah. So Clark says bringing Echo to space is their only choice, then jokes about another oxymoron, only choice. So is Cold Sweat. Bellamy flirts as he runs his thumb over her forehead and down her hair in another completely extra move.
Do they know they're flirting? I mean, we know they are, but do they?
They're really bad at it, so I'm guessing probably not.
Oh my god, how do they not know?
Bellamy says that he's still holding out hope for a Nightblood solution, but Clark says there was never any solution. Allie was right all along. But it's not over, according to Bellamy. Yet Clark is still stuck on the fact that her mom had a vision of her dying. And I, over here, am just, like, massively rolling my eyes because, come on, why is no one stating the obvious? Abby is not a freaking prophet. Like, Abby's and Raven's situations were totally different, and I get why Clark's afraid because, you know, she thinks that she's been too lucky and that the other shoe has to drop at some point, but can at least Bellamy just remind her of the fact that her mom isn't actually psychic, you know?
I mean, he does say, and I quote, that's not the same thing when talking about Raven and Abby. I don't think Bellamy believes Abby has special powers, but he sees that Clark isn't going to be convinced of that, and he just changes tactics.
I mean, that's not the same thing is the weakest argument ever. That's a tried and true television argument people, like, never actually say what they should be saying in real life. He needs to give her some specifics. I feel like Clark really needs to be reminded that, like, this is not, like, some hocus-pocus situation.
There's no voodoo happening here.
So Clark tries to tell him that if anything happens to her, Bellamy cuts her off, saying nothing is going to happen to her, and he tries to end the conversation. But Clark really needs Bellamy to hear this. Bellamy just, like, does not want to consider even the remote possibility that something could happen to Clark.
Yeah, totally. You know, this reminded me of two other scenes from The Hundred, and I think both were intentional. You know, the first was of Abby and Clark's farewell scene last episode when it was Clark obstinately refusing to listen as her mother tried to impart her last critical words of wisdom. And obviously here, the reverse is happening. It's now Clark who is trying to say everything she feels Bellamy needs to hear before the end. And the second thing it reminded me of was the beach scene in episode 6 when Bellamy tried to say goodbye to Clark. And before he could go on to say all the things that he wanted to say, Clark shut it down and refused to let him continue. And again, this scene is a direct reversal of that. You know, unlike the last time, however, or like maybe because Clark remembers that she wouldn't let Bellamy get through with what he wanted to convey, Clark steamrolls him and forces him to listen to everything that she's got.
Yeah, I love all that. I don't think it's a coincidence that it was written this way.
No.
I think that they very much were mirroring, especially that Bellamy scene. So yeah. Sneaky writers. Clark says that she and Bellamy have been through a lot together, and that even though she didn't like him at first, she always knew that every stupid thing he did was to protect his sister, even if Octavia didn't. Clark tells him that he inspires people because he has such a big heart, but the only way to make sure that they survive is if he uses his head too. To which he replies that he has Clark for that. But Clark can't let go of the fact that Raven's totally different situation premonition came true.
I feel like when that beach scene happened, we were quite convinced that if he hadn't been cut off, it would have come out that he loved her one way or another.
I mean, you were convinced. I was definitely convinced that there was, like, no situation that would have ended with the I love you from Bellamy. Not that it's not true, because it totally is, but...
Okay, well, either way, I think in this scene, the same can be said. Like, Clark never actually says the words I love you, but she doesn't need to. Like, this speech is her way of telling him how much she loves him, and you can't convince me otherwise.
I mean, I will not try to convince you otherwise. I do think she loves him, and I think this speech is also a way of her saying, like, just how much she believes in him. But this, it's not really the right time to explore her burgeoning possible feelings for him. So she settled with, you know, a use your brain instead, which in reality is Clark's confession of undying love. So,
and it's also really, really insightful advice, too. Like, Clark, ever the multitasker, is simultaneously declaring her undying love for him and giving him the best advice that she can offer, you know, which is, I won't always be there. You need to think with your head and not only your heart to survive.
And I think it's advice that he really really takes to heart, if you'll pardon the pun.
Oh, God.
But yeah, great scene, guys.
Great scene.
So as they're prepping the rocket, they realize the communication system is damaged. Raven says they're not going anywhere because there's no power on the ring. She was originally going to turn it on remotely with a comm system, but now that they don't have it, they can't get inside the hangar.
As if we didn't have enough crap to deal with, let's just make this even harder. Thanks, writers.
Clark tries to talk Raven down, but Raven says it's over, that she's not smart enough herself without Allie's code in her brain. And with that, Clark, like, tags Bellamy in, master of motivational speeches, who then asks Raven how many times she saved their asses before they'd ever even heard of Allie. According to Raven, too many to count.
This is another moment this episode that felt like a nice button to wrap up a storyline. You know, we've already talked about Raven's self-confidence issues and that she forgets how important she is to the rest of her team and family. And I love the way this neatly reiterates in this scene. This isn't anything that we haven't seen before, but it's a great way to wrap up Raven's emotional arc this season. And I like that it also reminds us of how good Bellamy is at motivating people. You know, he's going to need that skill over the next few years on the arc.
Yeah, you know, I also think that this is the show's way of reminding us that there are some things that Clark can't do that she needs others for. Because, you know, she failed at convincing the Grounders to share the bunker, and she fails here trying to talk down Raven. Because, you know, although Clark has a really deep capacity for emotion, she can't always translate that verbally. But Bellamy, on the other hand, is like the proverbial heart in this relationship, and he's the one that people follow, and not only follow, but really love. And his ability to talk to people in such a genuine manner is a skill that I think is sometimes overlooked, but one that is extremely important in a leader.
Oh, absolutely.
So Bellamy says they don't need Allie on the Ark, they need Raven. And at that, Raven suddenly has a light bulb moment. Allie transmitted herself to the ring using the pod in the temple. And if Allie can do that, then they can remotely turn the power on the Ark that way too. And they have something better than the pod. They have the satellite tower.
So, I feel like some version of Allie's consciousness is, like, definitely hiding somewhere on the Ark, and it's just gonna bite us in the butt next season. You?
One can only hope, am I right? but seriously, I have a lot of theories relating to this, but I don't want to talk about them until the end of the episode, so all I'll say now is that it probably wasn't just Raven's brain wanting to go to space to kill herself. I think that something in Allie's code wanted her to go to space for a specific reason, and I think we will find out that reason next season. At least that is what I am anticipating.
Me too.
So Monty and Murphy sit on the generator, and Monty struggles to put his gloves back on his burnt hand.
So I saw online that most of this scene was actually ad-libbed. I think they said that during filming, Christopher Larkin actually couldn't find the other glove, and he just incorporated that into the scene, and they kept rolling. And, like, naturally, Richard Harmer just, like, played along, and this magic moment was born.
Oh my God, I love that. Like, shoving Monty's glove on at the count of one is definitely a Murphy thing to do.
I would love to believe that Richard ad-libbed that, but who knows? You know, maybe at that stage, the direction was like, oh, this is where we're going, so let's do the lost glove idea. And blah blah blah.
I'm gonna give Richard the benefit of the doubt because he's an incredibly talented actor, and I could totally see him ad-libbing this. So.
Oh, me too. And I'm gonna believe that as well.
Okay. So they pick up the generator and make their way toward the lab, despite Monty's obvious pain. Murphy can see that he's losing Monty, and he tries to get him to focus by talking about Harper, but it's not enough, and Monty passes out. So Murphy tries to wake him, but he can't. So he has to make a choice: Monty or the generator, and he chooses the generator. And I really love how when Murphy is trying to distract Monty, he's, like, asking whether he's told Harper he loves her. Murphy says, "It's crazy how it changes you, isn't it?" Because that drives home the fact that Murphy knows that being in love and having someone you care about more than yourself has really made him a better person. And that makes me so happy.
Me too. You know, the fact that Murphy can even relate to Monty and is able to use Monty's connection to Harper as a means to distract him is really a testament to how much Murphy has changed himself and his own connection to Amori. You know, he understands how overwhelming that connection can be because he feels it himself. And he guesses, correctly, that it will be enough to distract Monty from his current pain. You know, Murphy is calculating and also emoting, and I loved this.
Yeah, it's Murphy at his best.
Mm-hmm.
Raven, Clark, and Bellamy are heading toward the satellite tower. Raven says they just have to plug in the comm device into the base of the tower, and that will allow them to open the hangar door. When Clark asks Raven why she's smiling, Raven reveals that they can't actually open the hangar door inside the rocket, which means that Raven will finally get to take her spacewalk. I'm with you, Raven. I totally want to go to space, too. I want a spacewalk. I'm really jealous.
I'm so happy for her. I mean, I don't want to spacewalk, but I'm glad that she gets the chance to do the one thing she loves.
Yeah. Murphy comes running up with the generator, saying that Monty passed out, but they still have time to go get him. Everyone is shocked, but Murphy says they can be impressed with him later on. Now they have to go.
I mean, I'll admit, I was shocked.
Were you? I wasn't.
I mean, just that he said that out loud, I didn't doubt that he'd try to go back and help Monty. I just was surprised he admitted it so freely.
You know, Murphy's a new man. He is now a lover. He's not a fighter. and even Clark and Bellamy can see it in this scene.
Okay.
So Raven says that Clark can handle the tower by herself, but as Bellamy starts off, she calls him back. Bellamy's about to brush her off, you know, if this is one of those times when she tells him to use his head, but she just asks him to hurry. So I have a couple of things here. First, Clark really doesn't want to be separated from the group right now. Like, you can see it all over her face. She's so afraid that something is going to happen and she won't see them again.
Oh, absolutely. It's like some part of her knows she'll never see them again.
Second, I'm a little confused why Bellamy thinks she'd tell him to use his head. Like, do you think that Bellamy assumed she was asking him not to go after Monty here? I'm not quite sure.
Oh, no. I read that totally different. I thought Bellamy assumed Clark was telling him not to wait for her, should she not make it back in time. And, like, that's exactly what comes to pass.
Yeah, I don't think that's even occurred to Bellamy yet. I don't think he's given enough weight to Clark's fears because by sheer force of will, these two will keep each other alive. And Bellamy has not yet gone over to the, like, if I don't see you again side again. I think he could have thought that she meant to use his head when it comes to rescuing Monty, as in, like, when he gets to Monty. But overall, it was just an odd thing to say. Unless, I guess, he meant that he didn't have time for another one of her speeches, which is true.
Yeah, that is true.
And then last, do you think that Clark was actually going to tell Bellamy just to hurry when she called him back?
Yeah, I do. I think Clark knows that they don't have time for speeches. She really doesn't have time. I think she's already said everything that she needs to say at this point, and she just wants him to take care of himself and hurry.
I actually am going to use the same argument that I used for Bellamy back in episode 6. I don't think Clark had any ending in mind when she called Bellamy's name. I think Clark is so terrified right now that she's not going to survive, that she just wanted, like, one more second with him before he left.
Oh, yeah, I like that way better. Let's go with that.
So Raven tells Clark that it'll take 10 minutes to get back to the lab, so she'll have to leave herself those 10 minutes or she'll miss the rocket and they'll have to leave her behind. When Clark asks Raven for any last advice, Raven just says, run fast.
And that's that. Clark isn't going to see any of them again for at least 6 years.
That's morbid. But, you know, run fast is pretty good advice.
Yeah, I mean, as we'll see, every last second counts.
So Raven carries the generator inside and tells Harper and Amori to set it up. But Harper says she's going after Monty as soon as she sets it down. Raven is not down for this plan, that Monty will be fine, and then she asks where Echo is. And we see Echo hiding upstairs looking terrified as she puts white paint on her face. So what were you thinking in this moment when you saw Echo?
This is another trick question. I was thinking, one, where did you get that face paint? Do you just carry it around for emergency wartime?
She has to be ready for war at any moment. She's from Asgata. They, like, have war at, like, every, like, you know, pit stop that they have. They cause the wars.
Fine. And two, I'm just so done with Echo. Like, if I were Raven, I'd be like, well, that's that. Echo, if you don't get your ass down here and help, we're leaving you behind.
I don't think that that's not what Raven is doing.
No, I know. That's why I'm with Raven on this.
Were you at all worried that Echo, though, was going to, like, try to sabotage anything? Because she was, like, putting on her war paint, and I got very, very nervous all of a sudden.
Yeah, that did cross my mind, too. But, like, there just isn't time for that at this point, so I wasn't too worried, but it did occur to me.
She's such a sneaky little bastard, so I wasn't sure. I never know what to expect from her, honestly.
Yeah.
So Monty wakes up with only 14 minutes left, and as he pushes himself up, he sees Murphy and Bellamy coming for him. Monty realizes Murphy'd chosen the Sheen, and it seems for a moment like he's going to be angry, but then he hugs Murphy and says that he might not hate him anymore.
This was so cute. I love that the show gave Murphy and Monty this little mini arc this episode, and I like where they ended up. It bodes well for their future together on the arc.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I pretty much think anyone would have chosen the generator over Monty in this specific situation. I don't think that was, like, a cutthroat Murphy thing to do. But I'm really glad that this leaves an opening for Murphy and Monty friendship, because I think everyone should be blessed with a little Monty in their lives, you know?
Agreed. He's an angel.
So Clark gets to the tower and she plugs in the comm device, but it says the dish is not aligned, and she realizes that she has to plug the comm device in at the top of the tower. So she's looking at her watch, she has only 10 minutes left, and she knows that she won't have time to get back. So she calls Bellamy and Raven on the radio and tells them not to wait. And with that, she looks up at the tower, tells herself that her fight is over, and starts climbing.
I just feel for her so much. She cares about her friends so much, and she's always the one left alone in the end. This was heartbreaking, and Clark handles her own death sentence with such grace and dignity. I loved it.
I mean, like we said last episode, Clark is really... Sorry, guys. Brittany just, like, tried to, like, ninja catch a bug that came by and just...
I hit it.
What were we talking about? We're talking about Clark, death sentence. Right. Clark, she's on a self-sacrificing kick right now. And, you know, because of that stupid quote-unquote vision, she also has been thinking a lot about the possibility of her dying. So I think this in some way felt to her like it was destined. But for Clark, you know, as long as she's able to save her friends, I think she's able to accept her own death pretty easily. But I agree with you in the fact that I hate that she's always the one left alone. Like, she is always the one who's sacrificing.
Yeah.
So Bellamy, Monty, and Murphy get back, and Raven says they only have 5 minutes left. Bellamy notes that Clark's not back yet, but Raven says she should be on her way. In the meantime, Echo's missing, so Bellamy goes to find her while Raven gets everyone strapped in.
I would have paid a lot of money for Echo to have never been found.
I mean, Raven, like I said, didn't really seem to care one way or the other where Echo was, but let's talk about Echo in the next scene because I think we both have a lot of frustrations about this.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Okay. So Echo is in the office. She is about to commit suicide, as we see. And when Bellamy finds her, he asks if it wouldn't just be easier to walk outside. Echo wants him to leave her alone and go back to the sky where he belongs, because she belongs nowhere. But Bellamy says that if she kills herself now, she dies a coward. I do think it's interesting that both Murphy and Bellamy talk about suicide as cowardly in this episode, but that it feels so much less icky with this usage. When Murphy says it about Jasper, it's completely discounting the fact that Jasper had a mental illness. Like, he had depression, and that led to his feelings that life wasn't worth living. Whereas here, Echo is not depressed. She's just scared of the unknown, and she's choosing to die the way she's seen, you know, so many other people die instead of take that risk and go somewhere new to live in a new way, or to die in a new way, honestly.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. We talked about Jasper's suicide extensively, but I think that this was another way for the show to express that there is a difference between Jasper's decision and Echo's. Mental illness was the determining factor in Jasper's fate, and Echo's decision to commit suicide really minimizes the toll that people with depression face. And I like that the show made this last comment on that subject.
Yeah. So Echo asks why Bellamy is trying to save her when she betrayed him. He tells her that he's afraid too, that he still doesn't trust her and maybe never will, but that she's strong and they have a better chance of surviving if she's there. And plus, if they need someone to throw overboard to lighten the load, they'll have her. Raven finds them and tells them they have 2 minutes until launch, and Bellamy holds out his hand to Echo. She takes it and stands up. So all right, Britt, let's get into the Echo situation.
Okay, so first off, and putting my own issues aside, do we think that it's in character for her to have gotten this far and actually prepare to commit suicide? Because I don't. I don't discount that the writers wanted to make this final comment about suicide and the hardship of life on the 100 in general, and that this also makes for very dramatic television. But from the Echo I've seen, this felt very melodramatic to me in a way that didn't fit with the character we've come to know.
Well, I'm not convinced one way or the other. You know, she fought so hard to survive, to help her people survive, really. But maybe now that her people are safe, or at least some of them are safe, she's lost that drive to keep fighting in the face of something as horrifying and unknown as space. I don't think Echo actually believes they're gonna survive, to be honest. So maybe she wants to die on Earth, you know, somewhere she knows versus a completely new environment.
I guess for me, you know, we can argue it any way we'd like and extrapolate to Kingdom Come, but I don't think they gave her enough character development for me to understand this decision thoroughly. I like everything that you just said, but I'm not sure there's textual evidence to support it.
Yeah, I have a huge problem with Echo's character this whole season, if I'm, you know, gonna be plain. Mainly, why did she even need to be around? She was honestly kind of a useless character this entire season. I really thought, and I'm pretty sure both you and I talked about this in one of our first episodes, that Echo was going to have an exciting, thought-provoking storyline this season, when in reality, it just felt like she was wallpaper for Bellamy to, talk his big ideas to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Echo doesn't really seem to develop much at all this whole season, and it's not that I don't like her character, it's just that I've been so unimpressed with her story arc. I think it's possible they were saving a lot for next season, but that still meant that I had to watch her this entire season, the entire season of a, not a static character, but still a bit one note.
Yeah, I think that was a great question. Why is she around? What purpose does she serve other than irritating me? I think we'll find out that the answers to these questions are all going to be in next season. Although, I have to be honest, I am very concerned where they're going with her. It's been clear from the beginning that she has a stronger connection with Bellamy than she does with anyone else on the arc. And I'm worried about the implications for what that means. If it wasn't obvious over the last few podcast episodes, I really, really do not ship them. And I think it would be absurd for Bellamy to feel romantically inclined towards the woman who, for all intents and purposes, murdered Gina. And then almost murdered his sister, who only survived by technicality and sheer dumb luck. That makes no sense to me, and I pray they don't go there. And it's not just because of my Bellark Shipper goggles, which I do freely admit color some of my judgments. And one more thing, if they do get together, that will mean that they'll all couple up in space, and poor Raven will be stuck as a seventh wheel for six years.
No.
That is a fate worse than death, and I refuse that they will choose to torture her like that after everything they've put her through already.
Yeah, Britt and I have talked a lot about this, and aside from their first episode together way back in Mount Weather, I never actually worried about the writers taking their relationship in this direction. But now, given the subtext in this episode, I am not so sure. Actually, more than that, I'm actually pretty convinced it will go in a romantic direction, only so that the writers can add tension to the Bellamy and Clark potential/eventual romance. What I would love to see is Echo transferring her, really intense loyalties to Bellamy as, her new quote-unquote king, if you will, and becoming his protector, his bodyguard. She is a force to be reckoned with when it comes to someone that she truly believes in. She puts her whole heart and soul into her beliefs, and I want Bellamy to have someone like that on his team and watching his back, especially now that he's probably going to be spending the next 6 years thinking that Clark is dead. So what I do not want from this, but what I need to come to terms with, is Bellamy and Echo as a romantic pairing for all the reasons that you listed. Octavia aside, I think that can be excused because she survived, but Echo was majorly responsible for Gina's death. And I think it would be disrespectful if that were overlooked. However, I do think this show has its characters maintain relationships with people who have contributed to their trauma in some way. I think maybe because it's hard to hold on to grudges for too long. So I don't want Bellamy to hold on to a grudge, so to speak. I just don't like the thought of him with Echo romantically because of the past. But again, pretty sure that's where we're going, so I will just have to get over it.
I am not getting over it. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but I'm not pleased, and I will not get over it if they pursue a romantic relationship with them. Sorry.
I do want to say, that's not to say that Tazia Telly's wasn't amazing, because I think she brought such a necessary level of depth to her portrayal of Echo. She saved this character for me, if I'm going to be honest. And I'm thrilled that she's going to be a series regular next season, if only because I'm hoping that they're going to take Echo in an interesting direction and give Tazia a chance to actually, stretch her legs.
Oh, yeah. I love Tazia Telly's. I think she has such a good grip on who Echo is. Fundamentally. And from all of the interviews I've read from her, she's an incredibly thoughtful actor. And, from what we've seen on the screen, she's obviously an incredibly talented one as well.
Yeah. So I guess we'll see where they're going with Echo, but overall, not really impressed with her character this season.
Not pleased. Not pleased.
So Clark is climbing the tower and slips, almost falling toward death as she sees the death wave barreling toward them. And look, guys, all I'm saying, I would never have been able to climb that tower, aside from the fact that I have no upper arm strength. If I had, slipped right there and saw what she saw, I'd probably, fainted and fallen off and, crushed myself on the ground.
I'm not as terrified of heights as Sarah is, but I think it's just plain unrealistic that Clark doesn't die of a heart attack right then and there looking at that death wave, which we can now see is very aptly named.
So the time is up. Clark is still not there. Everyone else is in the rocket, but Bellamy is still outside waiting. Raven calls to him, and he knows, but he still waits a few more seconds. And the Raven tells him that it's now or never. And with that, he turns around and heads back to the rocket, and he watches the hatch doors as they close, and then he shuts the rocket door.
I love that this time it's Bellamy has to, quote unquote, pull the lever, so to speak. That's such a nice change from the norm.
Yeah, this was like the perfect callback to season one when Bellamy had to shut, when Clark had to shut Bellamy and Finn out of the dropship. Like, the show isn't really particularly subtle. It killed me to see Bellamy waiting for her, not getting the message from her that she's not coming back, which is probably a good thing because he might have, like, gone out after her.
Yeah.
But we all know she's still at the satellite tower, but Bellamy still has that hope that at the last second, Clark will still, like, pull through and make it in.
Yeah, and I love that in the end, you know, he really took her advice to heart. Pun intended, and used his brain to make the tough call. This season was particularly obsessed with visions and prophets, and I liked that this bit of foreshadowing earlier in this episode came full circle, and it was really satisfying.
Yeah. Harper sees that Clark isn't coming, and Amori asks if they can give her another minute. Bellamy says they're out of time, and Clark would want them to save themselves. So I'm interjecting here to say, at this moment, that when Amori asked if Clark could have another minute, it just, like, filled my heart with warmth. It took her to, like, this new level of esteem, and I already loved her. But, you know, she's finally found people who are choosing her, who want her, and because of that, she is choosing them back. Like, she wants them back. And it goes to show how abused she's been her whole life, both by Bayliss and by society in general, that she's now, you know, really attached herself to this group of people.
Oh, I love this too. My darling Amori. Like, look how much room she has in her own heart for affection and humanity once she's experienced kindness and acceptance from others. I also really like that Clark is the one she's willing to wait for. Clark, you know, the woman who almost let Abby experiment on her but then saved her from that fate twice. I think it's a nice moment of cause and effect here.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And there are so many reasons that she could hate Clark, but instead she's chosen to care about her.
Mm-hmm.
And that's beautiful. It's beautiful, Amori. Raven asks Bellamy if he's sure about this, but Bellamy says it's the only choice. He looks back one more time, and as the rocket fires, he says maybe we meet again. From the satellite, Clark watches as the rocket leaves.
Oh my god, the look on his face is so painful. I can't look at him in so much pain. It just kills me.
I mean, it's like, quote unquote, the only choice. He has even adopted Clark's favorite oxymoron. And I also love how Raven looks to Bellamy to make the final call. Because, like, all Bellark aside, it's clear that Bellamy is going to be the leader, like, the one that they all look to make big decisions. And he has more than earned this position, honestly. He's earned it, and he's going to be great at it, because he doesn't just have a big heart. He's also incredibly smart and a great strategist. And now that Clark's not around, he's going to have to take her place as the thinker as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think Raven had a small taste of what it feels like to make impossible choices this season and found that she doesn't care for it. You know, I think she's more than happy to let Bellamy assume Clark's position as the leader.
Yeah, Raven has an invaluable role to the group, obviously, but she's not a leader. She's a planner, she's an engineer, and that's, of course, incredibly important, but she's not a leader. And it's great to see that they're all kind of finding roles they excel in, so I'm excited to see what those roles eventually become after years on the Ark together.
Yeah, and now Bellamy has to be a mother and a father to this group of delinquents for 6 years, so Godspeed, Bellamy. Godspeed.
So the rocket leaves the atmosphere and they start floating. Raven welcomes them to zero G but warns them not to take off their belts as and free float because they'll waste air. When they see the Ark, it's dark, and they realize that Clark hasn't turned the power on yet. But Bellamy is still convinced that she will, and at that, Raven goes to suit up for her spacewalk. So Bellamy's unwavering faith in Clark, even now, is incredibly touching. And not only does Raven trust Bellamy, but she deeply believes in Clark. And she knows that if anyone can get the power back on at the last second, Clark can.
Yes, absolutely. And I love Amori and Echo's looks of disbelief when Raven starts to float and flip in zero G. They are absolutely mesmerized by this, and it was so fun to watch their reactions.
I mean, Amori is just, like, looking around like, this is so cool. But Echo, on the other hand, is looking around like, what the hell is going on? And it's perfect.
Yeah, they were perfect.
So Clark is on top of the tower, but the computer says the dish isn't aligned, and she realizes that she has to physically align the dish herself. Raven gets to the ring on her spacewalk, but the power still isn't on, and her oxygen is getting low. We flash back again to Clark on the tower. She's desperately trying and failing to realign the satellite until the last second she gets it, and the signal sends, only to have the comm device break because of the radiation.
Oh my god, this was the most stressful thing to watch. I was on the edge of my seat, like, come on!
I mean, until we get to the next scene where they're all trying to get the O2 on and, like, basically dying, when Britt and I were freaking out, even though, like, we knew, obviously, they weren't going to die, but the tension is very real.
I mean, yeah, that's why this show is so good. Even when you know how it's going to end, it's the getting there that's so exhilarating. This show is so good at building tension, and I love the way they cut between Clark and the scenes in space this episode. It was perfectly executed and really emphasized the time crunch.
Yeah, definitely. In the rocket, they're all checking their air supply. Murphy has 15% oxygen, and Maury has 17%, which he says is good because he doesn't have to watch her die, at least. Suddenly, Bellamy says, "I left her behind. I left her behind, and we all died anyway." But as soon as he says that, Monty sees that the power has come on the Ark. Clark did it.
I love this line from Bellamy because it really shows the guilt he's feeling. Like, sure, he was able to compartmentalize when the time called for it, but it's clear this decision is going to haunt him for the rest of his life. And this is just a small taste of that.
Yeah, I mean, it will definitely haunt him, but luckily it wasn't for nothing. Clark got the power on, and he's right. This is what she would have wanted for him. So I think he'll really have that to hold on to, at least.
Yeah, very true.
Clark is running away. The death wave is literally seconds behind her. So she gets to Becca's lab, which is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen. Like, really?
Absurd.
That was their action movie moment.
Yeah.
Because, like, usually the 100 is better at, like, being not realistic, but, like, possibly believable.
More believable than running away from the giant death wave of doom right behind her.
Raven finally gets the hangar door open, but she realizes that her oxygen levels are at critical. Clark makes it into the bunker and takes off her helmet, and as she passes out, we see that she's covered in burns just like in Abby's quote-unquote vision. Ugh, writers, don't validate this. Abby is not a psychic. This was not fate. Now Clark is always going to think that. Now she's going to, like, turn into some, like, wonky, like, you know, spiritual.
I mean, the writers are the ones orchestrating all of this, so I think that they planned for this bit of symbolism.
I am still so terrified that Abby's going to be, like, genuinely psychic next season, so please don't jump the shark, writers. If you're listening to me, just don't do it.
Bellamy said earlier in this episode that they told Abby how to fix her brain, so I don't think that's going to happen. Fingers crossed.
I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I hope not, but we'll see.
I hope not.
They get on the Ark, and Raven leads them to the access panel for the oxygen. They're all running out of oxygen, but as Maury says, when that happens, they share. So Monty is talking Bellamy through the installation of the oxygen generator. And when Bellamy is taking too long to open the wall panel, Echo just, like, pushes him out of the way and knocks it off the wall.
I like how in this moment of panic, it's the two grounders who keep their cool and use their common sense. And Maury, darling and apple of my eyes, suggests the obvious that when one person runs out of oxygen, by golly, they share. Like, not only is this, again, another delightful display of affection and team spirit from Maury, but it's also really practical, you know, especially from someone who has only just learned what oxygen tanks are and how they work. And then we have Echo, who is clearly frustrated with Bellamy's formal approach to removing this panel from the wall, and even though she has no idea what's going on or how to fix it, she just recognizes there's a much more efficient way to get this done and just goes ahead and does it.
Yeah, I do like how Echo immediately shows her worth here. Like, maybe if it left her on Earth, it would have taken Bellamy too long to open the panels here and they all would have died. So it might be good for them to have someone on the Ark who thinks differently, who thinks like a grounder. And it gives credence to what Bellamy said earlier, that they have a better chance of surviving when she's with them.
Yep, couldn't have said that better myself.
Did you say that?
I think I just said that earlier today. You stole it.
We share a brain sometimes.
We also have these conversations like 100 times a day.
Yeah. 100.
Got it?
That's last episode, guys. So everyone is sharing oxygen, and Bellamy realizes that Monty is passing out before he can tell him how to finish the installation, but Monty manages to tell him to flip the breaker. Bellamy does, and then he passes out, and it's totally silent. Britt and I are also about to pass out, and then we hear the air turn on again, and slowly they all wake up and crowd around the air vent breathing.
Oh my god, this is one of the most stressful scenes of all time. I nearly died. when they were all passed out, you know, before the air came on, it actually really reminded me of the last episode when Jaha and Kane gassed all of the Sky Crew and they were, like, totally limp. With the seven of them completely still here, I couldn't help but notice that they looked so lifeless. Like, it was really creepy.
Yeah, but it was, like, actually really emotional, though, too, seeing them all share their oxygen, because none of them would let the others die. Like, they worked as a team, and it really bodes well for the next 6 years together. Like, I feel like they're gonna have each other's backs.
Definitely.
So Bellamy picks up the bottle of alcohol, the quote-unquote baton that Jaha left back at the end of season one, and he looks out the window as all of Earth burns. Reuven comes up, and she says that Clark saved them again and asks if they can do this without her. But Bellamy says that they don't, or that if they don't, Clark died in vain, and he won't let that happen. And when he asks Reuven if she's with him, Reuven says, always.
So sad.
The symbolism with the baton here was really perfect. Like, this was the bottle that they passed around to each leader on the Ark with instructions that it was only be drunk when they got back to Earth. But now Bellamy gets the bottle, and he's been, you know, passed the metaphorical baton, or, like, literal baton. but while he's now taking on the mantle of leader, he's already been to Earth, so this bottle is empty.
That's such a good point. I didn't even think of that. I love the way they positioned Bellamy and Reuven in this scene, framed in silhouette against the giant window looking down on Earth. It's clear from their stance and the space between them that there is nothing romantic going on here. You know, they're platonic. But besides that, there is a very deliberate Clark-sized space between them, and it's so obvious that she's the missing piece in this trio of musketeers and how much she will be dearly missed. It's such a beautiful shot. It's so evocative of their emotional state, and it's such a great way to frame the next phase of their journey. It's just a great piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, aside from Rit, like, really needing to clarify that Bellamy and Raven are platonic, which I find hilarious.
They are platonic!
I mean, I agree, but I think it's funny that you had to clarify it. This scene is incredibly powerful. You know, the two of them have been through so much together, and you're right, they've usually been through it with Clark alongside them, and now she's not there anymore, but they have to soldier on without her. But at least they still have each other, and I'm feeling really confident about that. Like, these two, they're family now, and they're going to keep everyone else alive.
Agreed. I'm feeling really good about this.
So then the screen goes dark and up flashes 6 years and 7 days later.
Oh my God.
And I'm pretty sure my stomach like dropped into my feet when I saw that, because for some reason I was like totally prepared for 5 years. That seemed fine to me. But when it was 6 years, it was like, oh my God, it's been forever.
It was just like 5 years was like the maximum sentence, right? Like, why on earth would you delay anything beyond the max? Like, this was crazy.
It's been weeks since the episode and we're still talking about this time jump. But let's get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Got a lot to say. So Clark's eyes open and we see the trees and the birds and the sun, and as the camera pulls back, we see that Clark is lying on the hood of a rover, drawing. She then grabs a small satellite and a radio and goes to sit on the log. So I just want to say, I love Clark's new hair. I don't know why she feels the need to like dye chunks of it red when it's just her and Maddie, but I like how it kind of merges so many parts of her life into one style. Like, she is the Sky Crew girl and she's the grounder.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it perfectly. It's a visual blend of all the different quote-unquote hats she's worn on this show, and she's brought them all together and is now in control of her identity now that she's come to terms with everything that happened. And can I just say, like, damn, she looks hot. This is her best look on the show by far.
And also, have we ever seen Clark look so at peace? Like, when we first see her, it's like there's something different about her. And it's because this girl we see, she's genuinely just, like, chilling out and smiling.
Yeah, it's a new look for Clark, both literally and metaphorically. Like, she's happy.
Yeah. Clark radios Bellamy, saying that if he can hear her, it's been 2,199 days since Prime Fire. That's a long time. And she is still doing this every day to stay sane and remind herself of the person that she used to be.
I mean, the lady has been dear diarying to Belly Maeve, who may or may not have been listening, for 6 years and 7 days. Like, not the gang, Bellamy. Is there any question at this point that she doesn't love him romantically, or is this still up for debate?
I think in this fandom, it will be up for debate even when Clark and Bellamy, like, get married and have children.
I hope that's season six, and I hope Echo is their nanny.
Oh my God. And Maury can be their godmother.
That would make Murphy their godfather.
Oh my God, that would be like a cutthroat little kid, you know?
Oh my God. Okay, moving on.
Yeah. So apparently it's been safe for them to come down from the Ark for over a year now, and Clark wonders why they haven't. She hasn't been able to make contact with the bunker either. They've tried digging them out, but there was too much rubble. So when Clark said, "We've tried digging them out," I almost had a heart attack, guys. I was so ready for Bill Cadigan to just, like, come climbing out of the rover. I was, like, ready to, like, take my victory lap.
Oh, me too. I was like, oh, my God, who is it? Who is this we?
But we'll find out in a second.
It's not Bill.
But Clark still has hope, but Bill still has hope. I still have hope for Bill.
Wherever he is, Bill still has hope.
But Clark still has hope, and she tells Raven to aim for the one spot of green and they'll find her. But as she's saying this, she hears a ship enter the atmosphere, and as she looks up in awe, she radios, "Never mind, I see you." So what was going through your mind at this point? Did you think that Bellamy was actually coming back with the group?
No. I didn't think it was going to be that easy. Like, cold dread was running through my mind at this point, and I knew this couldn't be good.
I mean, you know me. I was, like, pretty sure I knew who it was, but I was still, like, holding my breath. So Clark runs over to the rover and climbs in the back, where she wakes up this surprise young girl sleeping inside. This girl, whose name we learned is Maddie, doesn't want to have lessons today, but when she hears the thrusters of the ship, she sits up excitedly. Maddie runs out and Clark smiles until Maddie yells back that she thought the ship was small that Clark described. When Clark hears this, she knows something is wrong.
So first off, I just want to say that I want to adopt this child. She is mine now, and I'm so glad that Clark actually adopted her. I was really worried that Clark was going to spend this time jump all alone, and I am so relieved that she has someone to keep her company and to keep her sane. And I am so excited to see how Clark has changed now that she's a mom and what that means for them. You know, and what new directions they can take this on the show. Because it's true what they say, when you become a parent, everything changes, and the very nature of this show has just changed dramatically.
Like, seriously? I don't care who this girl is. I will not protect her with my life. Anyone who wants to hurt her is going to have to go through me. But I'm embarrassed to admit this, but did you take, like, a few seconds when you saw her to think, like, when was the last time Clark had sex? Was she going to become pregnant? Because I obviously very quickly realized it was absurd, but it took me a minute.
Oh, yeah, me too. I had to do the mental math real fast, and then I realized that didn't add up. Thank God.
Yeah. Also, that sense of foreboding when Maddie calls out that she thought the ship was small. I mean, I knew it wasn't Bellamy, and it still chilled me.
From now on, everything that Maddie does is going to concern me. Like, she hurts, I hurt.
Yeah, agreed. Definitely agreed. Maddie is our baby. So when Clark looks through the scope of her rifle at the ship, she sees Allegius Corporation, Cell Block R, and Gagarin Prison Transport all painted on the side. So Maddie is sitting here shouting, like, they're here! But Clark tells her to get down, to get back in the rover, to get the rover out of sight, and to load the guns, all of them. And as Maddie runs off, Clark watches the ship land. Guys, it's the Lost Allegius Miners! I'm so excited I could puke!
I could puke too, but mostly because they scared the crap out of me and I am very, very worried.
I realized we didn't see Bill Cadigan at all this season. Like, I was totally convinced we would. But I have not lost hope. My other theory was that Bill Cadigan was actually sent to prison and ended up being sent to the Allegius mining colony, and that he was on that ship that got lost. So I'm going to keep waiting for that until the very last possible second. I'm still waiting for you, Bill.
I am very proud of you for your predictions this season. I've been very impressed.
Even though pretty much none of them came true.
Well, you did predict that the Allegius miners were going to come into play at some point, so I'm giving you that.
Yes, that's true. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Will take my bow.
Take a bow.
But speaking of them coming into play, I am very curious about how they have come into play now. Like, why are they here? Why are they literally, like, here, right where Clark is? I don't know that this is a coincidence. I have a theory. Do you want to hear it? Yes, you do. I'm answering for you because I'm going to go ahead and say it. We know that figuring out how to return to Earth was a quote-unquote five-year plan for Raven and her team, and we know that Raven is aware of the Allegius Mining Company because there was an article about it up on her screen back in episode one this season. So what if Raven got it into her mind to somehow use the fuel for that ship to get back, and in her quest to locate the ship, she somehow woke up the miners in hypersleep on the board somehow? And they then followed her signal, found the others on the Ark, and that led to them returning right to Earth where Clark is. Also, maybe that's why Raven, Bellamy, and all of them have not come back yet, because I don't know if they've been, like, held captive or what happens, but it's very suspicious to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also not convinced that this isn't why Allie wanted Raven to return to space all along, although to what end, I have no idea.
Yes, I love this idea that the Allegius miners were discovered by the delinquents. And I was also totally thinking that, too, about Allie, and that this was her plan B when the City of Light failed. You know, like, what does she want and what does she need from the miners?
Yeah, and I can't wait to meet these guys. And women, are there women? Is this, like, a co-ed prison?
Don't know.
We're going to get characters who have left Earth, like, completely intact and are now returning to it to find it almost completely destroyed and humanity all but wiped out. And now they're the Sky Crew, but it's backwards in the way that, like, they were thinking there'd be a ton of people left, but they only find out now that there's basically no one left. And then Clark, of course, represents our grounders, and the one crew in the bunker are our mountain men, so it's like we've reset.
It's true. It's so cool. I love that.
And, gotta say this, because I'm a shipper at heart, I already am setting Raven up with one of them, because, like, girl doesn't need a man, or woman, either way, but it is sure nice to have, and Raven deserves to have nice things.
Agreed, although I'd like her to settle down with a nice boy, and I don't know if there are any nice boys on the prisoner transport ship.
That's true. I am looking forward to what has to be at least one, like, straight-up evil person on that ship. Because, I mean, these people are apparently bad enough to be exiled from Earth, so they're probably going to be a rough crowd.
Yeah.
But there will inevitably be someone who was, like, falsely accused or unjustly imprisoned, and as soon as we meet them, that is who I'm shipping Raven with. Don't care who they are, what gender, what age, that's who Raven's getting.
Okay, well, we'll just have to wait and see about that, I guess.
Oh my god, it's like 7 months. Like, Clark waited 6 years and 7 days, but I don't know how the hell I'm gonna wait 7 months.
True, but oh my god, I think that this is I think we're done.
Season four, everybody.
We just need to talk about our favorite scenes and lines now.
Yes, we do.
So what was your favorite scene?
Do you have to ask? Because it's obviously the last scene where we get the reveal of both Maddie and the Allegius Minors, because, guys, I am so here for this. I cannot even express the depth of my excitement. I don't think I've ever, like I said earlier, I've never ended a season of The 100 so pumped about what's to come, and that's saying something, because I think that every season ends on a pretty big cliffhanger.
Yes, I loved that scene too, but my favorite scene was Clark and Bellamy's farewell scene. Shock. Even though they don't separate until later, this was the scene where Clark finally told Bellamy, in her own way, how much he means to her, and I loved it, if that wasn't apparent from before. Also, their flirting at the beginning with all the oxymorons was adorable.
It was adorable. And very extra.
It was. So what was your favorite line?
So, weirdly enough, I know there's a lot of great lines in this episode, but my favorite one that I just can't get over is when Amori asks if they can give Clark another minute. Because, guys, Amori has come so far, and this was definitely a line that I did not expect from her. So it was a delightful surprise to see how, just how much Amori has come to care about, you know, not just Murphy, but the rest of these people, and that she would risk her own survival for them.
Yes, I loved that line too, and I was going to pick that one, but since I can't, I will go with the line where Bellamy asks Raven if she's with him, and she replies, always. I really, really love their relationship, and they've also come so far, and they really need each other to face what's coming in the next 6 years in space, and this was just so heartfelt and poignant, and I loved it.
It was a beautiful line.
It was beautiful.
I'm so glad they have each other.
Oh my god, it was so good. And that's our episode, you guys.
Oh my god, that's our season.
That's the last one. If you want to get in contact with us, you can. You can email us at skycastcrew@gmail.com. That's skicastkru@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at skycast, and you can find us on Tumblr at skycast.tumblr.com. You can also tweet at us at our own Twitter accounts. I am at bperlman89.
And I'm at Sarah R. McCabe.
So thanks for joining us on Skycast. We will rise from the ashes in a few months, but for now, may we meet again.
May we meet again. Bye, guys.
Oh my god, we're done.